You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Both major parties are gearing up for their national conventions ahead of the presidential election. Ken and his guests look back at some of the great moments in political convention history. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, it's hard to turn on a TV without seeing an advertisement for very particular kind of prescription medications.
You've reached the age where you learned a thing or two. This is the age of knowing what needs to be done. So, why would you let something like erectile dysfunction get in your way? Isn't it time you talk to your doctor about Viagra? 20 million men already have.
Suddenly, she does something unexpected, and you see the woman you fell in love with. She's everything to you. But your erectile dysfunction? That could be a question of blood flow. Cialis Tadalafil for daily use helps you be ready anytime the moment's right.
It's just you and your lady. The setting, it's magical. But then, erectile dysfunction comes knocking again. But lucky for you, you have countless medication options that will make you just as randy as a teenager.
Too bad your lady doesn't have any. Even though more women than men suffer from sexual dysfunction, there isn't one available medication on the market.
Medications to treat sexual concerns, erectile dysfunction in men, low libido is the phrase thrown around for men and women, they're becoming a multi-billion dollar industry. This emerging trend in medicine and pharmaceuticals is research into low libido in both men and women. As you just heard, the last bit of audio was not a commercial, but a video advocating for a similar drug for women to be introduced to the market. New report shows that many drugs being prescribed may have adverse side effects and may not be terribly effective in treating sexual concerns. Joining us now to talk about the report is John Fauber, medical reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the USA Today Network. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is part of a wider investigation into pharmaceutical companies giving us prescriptions that we may not need for conditions that may not really be out there. Why did you focus in on these low libido medications in particular?
Well, we started a project a couple of months ago looking at a bunch of conditions, sort of conditions of everyday life that have been turned into medical and often psychiatric disorders, and there's a whole bunch of them. You may have heard of some of these, but one of them was, or actually two, were low libido in men and lack of interest in sex in women. And we had a story last week on how essentially lack of interest in sex had been turned into a medical condition by the drug industry.
And doctors typically have not defined lack of interest in sex as a medical condition in and of itself, right?
It's been around. It's sort of a, in maybe 20 years ago, I think, was when it first started getting mentioned in some of the psychiatric papers. But it wasn't a part of mainstream medicine, really, until, about 10 years ago. What happened was that I got a kick out of you playing the sort of the Viagra ads at the start of the program, because in the late 1990s, I think it was in 1998 when Viagra was first approved, that drug and then Cialis a few years later turned out to be a huge, huge blockbuster. They continue to produce billions of dollars in sales. But those drugs addressed a sort of a physiological problem, and that was essentially increasing blood flow to the penis. But the drug companies got, this idea that treating sexual disorders could result in some big money, and they sort of switched their focus from erectile dysfunction drugs to drugs that might treat lack of interest in sex. And so the quest began to try to find drugs that would increase sexual desire in both men and women. In men, most of those drugs have been testosterone products that you probably have seen ads for over the years. And in women, there have been a variety of attempts. They've actually tried testosterone in women. They've actually tried Viagra in women. Until last year, there were no drugs approved to treat sexual desire in either men or women, for that matter, although testosterone has been used sort of off-label. But then last year, a company known as Sprout Pharmaceuticals got approval from the FDA to market the first drug to treat lack of sexual desire, which is a drug called Addy, and it's approved just for use in women, premenopausal women.
Talking to John Fauber, medical reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at his reporting on sexual drive medications, medicalizing the idea of lack of sexual interest and trying to invent, research, develop, get approved, and then market drugs for those conditions, if we want to call them that. Yeah, there was this quest, there was a lot of talk about the idea of a female Viagra. Talk about Addy a little bit, the process that it took to get it approved and what its effectiveness has been, according to research.
It's had a long history. It was actually rejected twice by the FDA. They thought that the drug's minimal benefit was not outweighed by the severe side effects that the drug could cause, and so. But they kept at it. The company that originally there was a bigger company called Boehringer Ingelheim. They're a German company, and they essentially gave up on it and sold it to a company called Sprout Pharmaceuticals, which continued to pursue it. They got rejected by the FDA. I think it was in 2010. That was the second time. But they kept it up, and eventually they sort of tried a kind of a political campaign to put pressure on the FDA. They helped fund an organization known as Even the Score, which is an organization, an alleged women's sexual health organization that was pushing to get drugs approved for women's sexual problems. They helped start the organization, they helped fund it, and the organization put a lot of pressure on the FDA, on Congress. There was a letter-writing campaign. And so last year, after, you know, really nothing had changed in terms of the drug's effectiveness or its safety, the FDA decided to approve it. You asked about its effectiveness. It's I guess, what you would call minimally effective. One of the measures that was used to approve the drug and show its effectiveness was something called satisfying sexual events per month. And so they did a trial in which women got the drug, and then a different group of women got a placebo, and essentially there was somewhere between a half and less than one additional satisfying sexual event that occurred in the women who took the drug. So it has some very minimal effectiveness, but it has some serious side effects, primarily the fact that it can cause women to pass out or faint. There's a severe drop in blood pressure that can come from using the drug. It's a drug that you use every day. You take, you know, presumably for forever if you want to continue getting its marginal benefit. And that severe drop in blood pressure that can cause fainting is worsened substantially if you have any alcohol. The drug, they approved it, but they approved it with the provision that you not drink at all. So you can take the drug and get this additional one-half to, you know, one additional satisfying sexual event a month, but you cannot drink.
And you might pass out. And so there was
it's a great drug.
It was approved with this a pressure campaign. We played a little bit of a video trying to make the case that, hey, women deserve this drug as well as men do. But there was a limit. We're not seeing ads for this drug, Addy, this female sexual drive enhancement drug.
Yeah, that was part of the deal. The company agreed not to do any kind of direct-to-consumer advertising, you know, kind of like the drug ads you might see on TV at night, for a period of 18 months after its approval. So I think that's they have about another year yet before they can actually advertise to consumers, like on television or in radio ads. And the drug got kind of, the company that got it approved, Sprout Pharmaceuticals, sold the drug. The company was bought, and the rights to the drug were sold 2 days after its approval. They were sold to a company, a big Canadian company called Valeant, which has been in the news quite a bit over the last year or so because of price gouging and issues related to that. So they bought Addy, and they've had all kinds of financial problems. So there's been this sort of difficulty in getting the drug actually on the market. It's on the market, but it's been sort of this Valeant has had other problems. And And so Addie hasn't really taken off yet, and there's some question about whether it ever will, because it's just not, a lot of people just don't think it's a very good drug.
And you mentioned the process by which this got approved, and you've looked at other medications, not just these sexual drive medications. Is this common where the FDA says, we don't know, no, probably we don't want to approve it, and then pressure is put on via Congress, via public appeals, that sort of thing, and the FDA is prodded into accepting it?
You know, it happens. these sexual lack of interest in sexual desire drugs are kind of like, you know, they're not that important in the scheme of things. These are not life-threatening diseases. But, you know, it happens with cancer drugs. There's been a lot of pressure on the FDA to approve cancer drugs. We've written about this in a number of stories. Cancer drugs can be approved on a various different levels of effectiveness. The ultimate one is whether they keep you alive any longer or they make your life any better. But there's lesser measures that can be used to approve cancer drugs, something called a surrogate measure. And that could be something like you're making your CT scan look better or your blood test look better, but in reality you may not actually live any longer. So there's been a lot of effort to get these drugs that look promising because they make their lab tests look better, get them on the market because this is a life-threatening disease, and they're hopefully that eventually it'll pan out that this drug actually does keep people alive longer, but in many cases that never happens. So that it's happened with cancer drugs. It's happened with other drugs, but I think it was probably really noticeable and really transparent in this Addie case because the drug had such poor effectiveness. It had been rejected twice, and nothing really had changed other than the political pressure that was put on the FDA to approve it.
Talking to John Fauber, medical reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the USA Today Network. He recently co-wrote an article looking into drugs that are made and prescribed to treat sexual health issues, especially things like low sex drive. I want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have experience with any of these medications? Have you been watching them, taking them as a patient, considering prescribing them to your patients if you're a physician yourself? You know, somebody who has, are you taking something for low T? We'll get into that in just a minute. Is this a kind of medication the country needs? Something to treat low sexual drive? Is the FDA too quick to approve drugs or doing it right? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now looking at a recent report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel showing some medications that are used to treat sexual issues could have serious side effects without a lot of benefit. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you asked your doctor about these issues, about these medications? Does the nation need these kind of prescription drugs? Call 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. John Fauber stays with us, medical reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. John, want to touch on low T medications. These are testosterone medications, the idea being men, low sexual drive, not enough testosterone. What have we seen with these medications?
Well, if you've been watching TV, actually the ads have kind of disappeared recently, but people I'm sure can remember seeing a lot of these ads. Starting in the late 2009, 10, maybe 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. For years, there were ads for things like Androgel and Axiron. None of the. And by the way, before I forget, I'd like to just say that these stories, I've been doing these stories with co-author Christina Fiore with MedPage Today, mm-hmm. the online medical news site. We've been teaming up on these stories and others. Testosterone is an interesting product. Testosterone products have been around for decades, and for most of that time, they were approved to treat a very kind of a rare condition called hypogonadism, and it was essentially because of a medical condition, an injury or illness or genetic condition, certain men could have very low testosterone levels, and oftentimes they had them from early on, from their 20s on. And then in the 2000s, drug companies started to market these drugs toward men whose testosterone levels were declining because of age, just sort of a natural decline that comes with aging. There was a big study done in 2006. It was funded by a company called Solvay Pharmaceuticals. They're the ones that put Androgel on the market. And the authors who did the study, there were about five of them, all had financial ties to the company. And they did a survey in doctors' offices around the country and determined that about 14 million men over the age of 45 had low testosterone, and that one of the primary symptoms, that they said, of that condition was a lack of interest in sex. So testosterone ads started appearing on TV almost nightly, and not just to improve libido or interest in sex, but they were also being sort of pushed to improve your mood. There was some small hint that they might increase muscle mass a little bit. And this went on for a number of years until finally last year the FDA stepped in and said, you know, we don't think these drugs should be marketed toward men whose testosterone levels are declining because of aging. These drugs have been around for many, many decades for a specific, somewhat rare condition, and they forced the makers of all these drugs to put something on their label that said that the drugs are not approved to treat testosterone that's a result of natural aging.
I want to bring in our callers now. Mark is with us in Eau Claire. Mark, hi.
Hello.
What'd you
like? I'd just like to say that at age 32, I was very healthy, active sexually, and I went in and did I believe I had fairly normal testosterone levels, and I went and had a vasectomy done and had some complications with that. And since then, right after the sex drive went down.
We're losing you, Mark. I think the short version of the story, John, is that he had a specific problem after surgery there, and testosterone ended up helping him out. I mean, is that a response we see from there are people saying the stuff is working for them?
I don't doubt that at all, that he, you know, he felt it was helping him. I'm not sure what may have caused the, I think, surgery may have led to his loss of testosterone?
I think so. Yeah, we can't get into the specifics, obviously.
That may be something that's similar to what the drugs were originally approved for. I mean, a 32-year-old man normally wouldn't have, I mean, your testosterone levels start declining, but not so much that at age 32 they're going to be that much lower, so much lower that you're going to have lack of, you know, interest in sex or whatever. He may have had some kind of medical condition. But regardless, I mean, there are men who take testosterone and feel it does something for them, but that's not really science. I mean, that's somebody taking a product and doing a study on themselves and coming to the conclusion that it's helping them. And as you know, with things that are as ill-defined as interest in sex, there can be a tremendous placebo effect. If you think you're going to get better, and the condition is something that's already sort of in your mind, there's a good chance that you're going to see some improvement just because you really, you know, you think you're taking something that's going to make you better.
Let's bring on John in Mount Horeb now. John, hi.
Hey there, guys. Really interesting conversation. I just have one thing to say, and I think this goes, medical history aside and all that. I just feel like, you know, prescribing a pill for all these things just doesn't seem to be, to me, that necessary. I mean, I'm in my late 20s, but so I haven't had many problems in that area of life. But, you know, maybe it just would be a little easier on someone, instead of taking on the stresses of medications, to just change up your lifestyle a little bit. I mean, a little exercise, maybe, get a hobby. I don't know.
John, thanks for the call. We're running a little short on time. I want to bring John Fauber in. And that's a concern here, isn't it, that when we say, oh, there's a medical condition called low sex drive, there's a lot of things that might be part of it, and there's not one simple pill. It might be exercise. It might be depression. It might be any number of things.
Right. Lack of interest in sex is a very difficult concept to try to figure out how to treat. I mean, there's a million different things that can contribute to it. It can have a lot to do with stress. It can have to do with other diseases that you may have. It may have something to do with the relationship that you're in. It can It can have, certainly can be a result of getting older. But trying to define it and then treat it is very difficult. The caller sort of, I think, was implying that maybe society or medicine would be better off if there wasn't so much money put into trying to treat this condition, and instead people maybe tried to do things to try to improve their lifestyle, improve their lifestyle, whether it's eating better or exercising or losing weight or whatever.
John, as we start to wrap up, given the amount of money that could be at stake if someone came up with a successful drug, are we going to see drug companies stop trying on a cure so-called for low sex drive anytime soon?
I don't think so. One of the things we did for this story was take a look at how many clinical trials have been done over the last 15 years. We found at least 70 clinical trials involving 30,000 people. These are people that agreed to try, go into a trial and be a test subject, essentially a guinea pig, to see if they could find, for trials that were aimed at essentially improving libido. The only one that's resulted in a product being approved is this Addy, which is, a lot of people don't think should have been approved at all. So I think this is going to continue because I think the drug industry believes that if they do find something that works, it's going to be a blockbuster. It's going to sell billions and billions of dollars worth of product.
All right, John, thanks for joining us again today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
That's John Fauber, medical reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the USA Today Network, talking about a piece he co-wrote about the side effects of prescriptions and lack of effectiveness in some cases of medications used to treat sexual health issues. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time.